Welcome back to Not a Strong Start, a movie podcast that talks movies, television, and going out of our way to get ourselves canceled. I am your host, No Two for You.
I am not your host. Get in, get out.
And I am your other guy.
I was going to say that. That's my love life. Get in, get out.
And I'm your other guy. Where we're going, we don't need pilots.
Also my love life. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about show cancellations and not just shows getting canceled, but specifically more ones that got canceled a little too premature, right? Ones that maybe lasted one or two seasons. We wish we would have gotten more. And it felt like the writers never really got their full story arc. We never saw full completion, right? So Jose, hit us up with some of the numbers. I know you did a little bit of research on this about some of the first and second cancellation numbers. Let us know.
Yeah, you know, so cancellation over the last few years has been a hot topic, and we recently have an uproar over a recently canceled TV show in The Acolyte from Disney, which got me thinking, okay, what do the early cancellation numbers look like over the last 2 years? And when I took a look, in 2023, we had, give or take, about 54 projects. The TV shows that were canceled in their first or second season. Oh, that's almost one per week if you put it across the year. So far in 2024, which we still have, you know, over 3 months left in this year, we're already up to 40 shows that have been canceled within the first or second season. We're probably going to approach or surpass what we had last year. So those numbers, I feel are not looking good overall. And I feel we have a larger rate of short leap when it comes to TV shows, you know, where shows are not maybe given the time to find themselves or find their footing or get things right or correct those flaws as much as we did in the past. Which brings me to the first question to pose to you guys is, why do you think shows have such a short leash these days compared to in the past? George, what's one reason?
Well, first off, I have actually a different feeling towards this than what you've just stated. I actually think they're given a lot more leeway nowadays as opposed to back in the day. Because back in the day, I feel like shows were vetted a little bit better. You know, the pilot meant something. I don't think the pilot is a tool that's utilized as much these days thanks to streaming services. People are able to make a full season of a show, and then when it goes away, people are like, oh, damn, what the hell happened? Back in the day, we'd have a show like Generation X, which was shown as a pilot, as a movie pilot. Mm-hmm. That didn't succeed. They didn't get it. 10 episodes after that to prove themselves, to really elevate whatever they wanted to do. It was just like one show. Sorry, you didn't make it. You know, so I feel like there's a big difference now in how shows are even developed nowadays compared to back in the day.
Man, that is true. But we are referring more to once the show actually makes it on to once it's been approved and then makes it out there and you get your season through. Like that getting a short leash once you've already made it past that initial stage.
Yeah, I mean, it still goes like, think of shows back in the day, like, let's say ignore the pilot, you get 5 episodes. Like, it's just shows weren't developed the same way. Like, Dan, like, I think you could attest to this. Like, back in the day, like, a sitcom is being written as it's being produced. Like, you're not getting a sitcom with 10 episodes and that can be a season, you know? Mm-hmm. It's being, like, maybe 3-5 episodes and you're proving yourself every week. This current way of doing filming, you don't have to prove yourself on a weekly basis because the show's being aired in one day if it's like a Netflix kind of thing, you know what I mean? So I think that dynamic changes everything.
That's a good point, because I think pilot season was a real thing and they would drop pilots. And even when you mentioned Generation X real quick, it like triggered like a, oh crap, I totally forgot about that. I remember watching it and I was like, oh my God, there's Jubilee, right? And things like that. And like, we never got another thing. And that was when I was like, man, I kind of want to see more of that. But yeah, it's very different now. And the way that they used to do it was they had the pilot and they would start to get feedback from the pilot before they even worked on an episode 2 or 3.
Exactly.
And then once they got greenlit to do the next one, it's almost like they would do episode 2 and 3 if they would film. And then they'd start to release those before they did 4 to see what the feedback is. And if they maintain numbers, Then they start to produce four, and it felt like it was a quicker turnaround time that as they were only making them as people kept watching, which is why you never had like full seasons that would get canceled. Now we're in an era where it seems like I don't even know if pilot season is a thing anymore. And if it is, it's more just for the executives because we don't see the pilots. It's almost like the executives then see the pilot, they approve it, and now we get a full season that just drops. And the streaming thing is now different because, you know, you don't, it seems like now the whole season's already filmed by the time we, the audience, gets to actually view it, right? Like they don't do this really, this the weekly drop anymore. And even if they do, the full season's already filmed. So it's very different now. But to get to your point, though, Jose, with the specific question you're asking, the short leash, I think it ties a lot into what the movies is. And it's just executives afraid of being fired. That's really what it is. They give a very short leash to movies. They don't give a lot of creative freedom. You see so much more high turnaround and turnover on executives, like top brass of like studios. They tend to get fired after a couple of years. Like if they don't do right, their reputation's on the line and they don't have the freedom to allow time. So even when we sit there and we start to watch like a show that maybe had a good season, if it doesn't get the first initial praise and love, the executives already feeling the pressure of getting fired. So they don't have time to sit there and wait. And it changed. I felt like back in the good old days, you know, it's like they were given more leeway with this. And their reputation wasn't necessarily tied to the success of certain shows. And now for some reason, it feels like it is. Like the fact that we live in an era now that everything's such instant gratification and we move fast and social media and things trend so fast and things go viral so quickly, we don't have time for movies and TV to find their footing. Either you catch it now or they move on. And that's just unfortunate because some of the greatest shows we've had, the first season wasn't very good. Like they found their footing within the second or third season. And then that's why, to me, it's like when you watch like a good sitcom or something, it's always like that third season. That third season is that magical sweet spot because that tends to be their best season is the third, fourth season. We don't give that leeway anymore.
Yeah, I feel in the past, I remember watching shows like you said, where their first season might be very weak. Like you said, the second season might be weak, but there was more, you saw those shows transitioning through those more. They just had to show enough. And I feel like enough is not enough these days. I've seen shows that were quality and got received well and built a fan base, but they still got canceled after one season over the last couple of years because there's other factors in play, not just quality anymore. So a show might have gone through that pilot aspect and maybe done three episodes, but if it was good, it would have continued. If it built a fan base, it probably would have continued. There's more factors these days to influence that. I think personally, one of the things is you mentioned, George, streaming. I feel streaming affects it in two ways. One is with many shows coming out at once, ready to binge, there's more pressure on the week-to-week shows to hold an audience attention. So while streaming gets these binge shows, you know, you still have some streaming like Apple does week to week. Disney, overall, they tend to do week to week. And then you still have your regular cable shows that are not for streaming. They do week to week. So I feel there's more pressure on them to keep the attention span of now a fan base society that's used to getting everything all at once. Now you need to rate things in a certain way, like in the past, for those shows to keep them coming back. Well, with the binge, you don't need that. And then the other aspect, I think it's the oversaturation that you have with shows. With streaming, the TV show market is a lot less selective. And this is what you were touching on, George. It's a lot less selective overall because everyone wants their exclusive content. The 27 streaming services, they all want the this is mine, this is only mine. So you have shows getting greenlit now that would not have gotten greenlit pre-streaming. Probably would not have even made it past the introduction stage, never mind making it onto TV. Because when it was just TV, slots were limited. You know, you only had one 8 o'clock slot, one 9 o'clock slot. You don't have to worry about with streaming. You just put it out there. People can watch them back to back no matter what. So I do feel in those two ways, streaming is big. Are there any other reasons you guys appeal, variables that are affecting why things are getting pulled so consistently?
Yeah, so to touch on what you're talking about with the streaming, the fact that streamings now have their own apps, and you hear about like HBO Max, right? Or Max like struggling, maybe not so much them, but like the Hulu struggling, the Disney, that's why they're all like kind of combining again. That means that they require more money, which means they need more content to validate why we're paying $12.99 for the streaming app, right? I think that's some part of what you're talking about as well. Like, I think that goes with it. And then I wonder if there's a correlation between movies and television in the sense where with movies costing so much more money now than it used to in comparison to what they used to cost, you know, studios are spending more time and efforts on making less content and more expensive content when it comes to movies. There's a correlation there for their television because it means that the fact that they're spending on these big IP tentpole projects, you have less money to spend on more experimental television and stuff. And sometimes when you get shows like The X-Files that we loved, that wasn't a guaranteed sure thing when that came out. That was kind of an experimental show on Fox that they dropped and people just loved it. Like, it's that experimental stuff that we love and the stuff that we gravitate towards because they took chances. They let creatives be creatives. And when you have a streaming service or a studio, let's say, that's behind a streaming service like a Disney, they're driven all about the money. They have to validate, again, the executives' reputations on the line. They have to validate why we need to spend $12.99 for their specific streaming service. I think a lot of that goes into it.
I agree. Yeah. George, any other variables?
Well, yeah, Dan kind of touched on this when you mentioned that there's a big turnaround for the production of people, you know, like the producers and everything. We're getting a lot of young people are coming in. And what I'm seeing is the younger crowd who are writing and creating these new stories, they're not learning from their predecessors. You know, like back in the day, you're watching a show on TV and that show had to be self-contained. You know, there might be a backstory or like this thin line that's connecting everything together to something bigger. I think it's like Supernatural. You know, there's always that thing in the background with like the devil or God or Leviathan or something that's going to be going. But every week there's this singular story that they can just tackle. You could watch that one episode by itself and not feel like you were missing anything from something else.
Week of the week.
Yeah. You know, there's something to that formula that works. But nowadays, because everything's being dropped all at once, every episode, it feels like it's unfinished. You know, it's not even necessarily like a to be continued. It's more like it just ended. And it's just like, wait, there's so much more. And it's like, well, it's okay. I'm binging it. I'm going to get the next thing anyway. So you don't get that feeling of like an isolated episode. Like, I can't think of a TV show that's on streaming nowadays where I can watch it one episode by itself and feel fulfilled. It's like, no, I got to watch all 8 episodes or I didn't get the most out of this thing. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, Smallville, Supernatural, things like that, or X-Files, they used to call it the freak of the week.
Yeah.
So it was like you would close out a small story thread that was introduced, but then the overarching thread was still continue throughout the season.
Yeah. And this thing goes for a sitcom. You look at a show like Friends, in the background, it's always their relationship, you know, will they, won't they for Ross and Rachel. But in that episode, the conflict may just be like, oh, we're going to take your apartment and you're taking our apartment. This will be the little feud, you know, and that can be, you can watch that episode by itself. You know, they don't really have those kind of ways of storytelling nowadays. It has to just be this big, grandiose story as opposed to little micro feedings of content.
Yeah. And then that kind of goes with like with the idea of IP, right? Like a lot of studios always want to only make movies that have IP. And in a way with television, even if it's original content, it feels like they're still trying to create their own IP, like how Stranger Things did. It feels like everything's centered around making something big that's its own marketability thing where they can build merchandise and they can. It just doesn't feel like they just do stuff just to do stuff anymore. It feels like everything has to be bigger. Everything has to be grandiose. Everything has to be an IP that we can sell and market, and everything's just so revenue driven.
Have a spinoff.
Now. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's just like creativity. It's like, I remember reading an article, I forgot which filmmaker it was, but they were going, I think it was Scorsese or something, where they were going into detail about how back then when it was like the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, you had creative people that ran studios. And somewhere along the line, executives and business people took over and conglomerate companies took over. And it became them owning it and seeing it as a product. And they treated it like a Coca-Cola. right? And it became a product selling thing, and it became less about the art. And now we're in an age of generations and decades of executives and conglomerates that have taken over, that it's just like the content has just been fading, where now it's at a point of just like, man, it just feels so commercialized all the time. And when we get the little bits of really cool things that we love or we like, it tends to be more, you know, not always, but sometimes foreign filmmakers. Like, we get like a Parasite. We get something that's like a little different, more independent, like the Daniels doing Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is why we love projects like that, because it feels so fresh. It feels like something that we grew up watching, and it doesn't feel so commercialized. You know what I'm saying? Like, when Everything Everywhere All at Once came out, there's no way that the studio thought that this was going to be a big hit or anything like that. But yet they still gave them the creative freedom to do what they wanted. And we ate it up to the point where it won an Oscar. You know what I'm saying? Like, but there's no way that the studio thought this movie was going to be an Oscar winner. Like, I just don't believe that. I think they were pleasantly surprised when it did.
Yeah, and it comes out to the whole, the business mindset. So, I mean, if you look at it on the business aspect when it comes to these shows and stuff, it makes sense on the business aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not good on the creative aspect. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it on the business aspect, especially these streaming services, they're not really profitable. Even Netflix runs on debt most of the time. And there's really, you don't make revenue like you would with, television itself. If you do an HBO or CBS or an NBC and things like that, where you can add commercials and things like that. So in the business aspect, and you touched on this a little bit, Dan, we have ballooning budgets. These budgets for these some of these TV shows are going through the roof. You know, they're way above. Like, you have episodes now of shows that cost more than entire seasons of shows did 15 years ago. You know, I mentioned the Acolyte because that was one of the most recent thing that people are upset about. But using that as an example, you know, one episode of the Acolyte costs about $23 million for one episode. That is more than the entire first season of Breaking Bad. Breaking Bad, I think, averaged about $3 million per episode. So you could probably get two seasons of Breaking Bad for one season of this. So a show like Breaking Bad, that it's original, has no pre-existing fan base or anything, you know, you're willing to give it more of a leash and more of a leeway and let it find its footing and establish, because $3 million, even though for back then that was still expensive for that show, in the big scope of things, isn't that much compared to spending $180 million on the season. And the fans are not divided or going more towards negative. You have it on streaming, so you're not really making money off of it. Like, how much are you going to be encouraged to put out for another season? You know, that once all these projects are getting to that where they're costing more than movies, it's natural that you have to nail it right off the bat. Like, right off the bat, you need to nail it. People need to love it. It needs to be accepted. You need to get a fan base. There's no room to find your footing anymore when it comes to those big projects that we're doing.
Yeah, and I want to pose something to you guys, right? That was a good point that you mentioned, The Acolyte. We said there tends to be pilots that the executives are now, they're dictating whether we're going to like it or not. They looked at The Acolyte, maybe they're not the biggest Star Wars fans, and they said, Star Wars fans are going to like this, let's do a whole season. We watched it, and we said, no, we don't like it, this is not us, so they canceled it. Remember how Game of Thrones had that other spinoff where they spent so much money on that pilot, and they X'd it before we even got to see it? The executives made the decision that we weren't going to like it, but yet with The Acolyte, they said we would, because maybe they're not Star Wars fans that are running the Star Wars show. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it shows how much HBO has, like Jose's been saying, the tighter leash. I think they have a tighter leash over there and a better grasp at what their viewers actually want. Like, I like to think that HBO actually is listening to its fans and what they're wanting. And the proof is in the pudding when you look at how Game of Thrones ended and the fans were upset. But yet now look at everyone, like, we are eating up House of the Dragon. I think they took all those notes and they're like, all right, we got to fix it. And they've already announced that they're going to end it the next season or two. So they're not even trying to drag this out for like 10 seasons like the first one was trying to do. They're paying attention. Disney's production is not listening to its fans. They're not paying attention. I even have a little note of like, there's usually some kind of messaging or agenda. Like, they're sort of focused on like, look, we have this person that looks like this. Here's the thing. as opposed to like, well, what's the story? Is the story good? What's the story about? Like, don't push whatever it is that it's the face. I don't care about the face. I care about the content of the story itself. That's all I care about. Will you be transporting me to a world that I want to imagine myself in? And they're not thinking that way.
Yeah, and with, you know, using those two same companies and stuff, you know, HBO for decades has put out quality TV shows. I believe that they create their shows with the goal of maintaining the HBO reputation of making quality shows.
Yeah.
While Disney, I believe, again, because I'm not in their heads, they're making content in order to profit off of these large IPs that they have. So it's two different goals and mindset when it comes to creating these shows, and it's going to show in the product if you're going for quality and maintaining that reputation of quality, or if you're going to how can I make the most money?
Yeah, which, to back that up, what's Disney doing? They're constantly buying IPs. Mm-hmm. That's the business they're in, buying IPs, and how can we churn this out? How can we make this really what a movie and a TV show is for them? It's a commercial. It's a commercial for like, hey, we're going to have some product for you to buy someday. We're going to have some merch. We're going to have a ride at our theme park. That's all it really is. It's all just a commercial to buy our big new thing. Well, HBO doesn't treat it that way. They treat it as like, this is a piece of art that we want to share with you.
It almost felt like one of those conspiracy theorists. You know, he always say, you know, oh, the government's out to get us. And like, you have some people that believe in conspiracy theories, and other people are like, no, you're just crazy. Everything's fine. Disney is like, so for those conspiracy theorists that would always think, you know, the studios don't care about the art, they care only about this, Disney is the proof. Oh, see, I told you, and nobody can dispute this. Clearly, it's just about the commercialism, because we're telling them we don't like what you're giving us, right? They screwed up Marvel. They screwed up Star Wars. Like, what else are they going to screw up? Right. And it's like the proof is in the pudding, like we're saying. That's why I kind of give props to HBO for just nixing that pilot with Game of Thrones. They looked and they said, no, we don't believe this is the right product, because we feel like we're going to lose more credibility. And the great thing about that is then we heard later about how tumultuous it was on set and how much issues and things were behind the scenes of that HBO pilot of that show that never ended up making it to air. It was destined to be a disaster. I'm glad that they saw that and said that's not representative of what we're trying to put out there, right? You know, and Game of Thrones had such a success and trust from the fans to the creators that I completely understand why Max let the showrunners do their thing for those last few seasons, right? You can't get involved once they're established and prove that they knew what they were doing. I don't blame them for that. I give them props for trying to correct it. That's what I give them props for. And Disney's just not doing that.
Yeah. And while WB, which owns HBO, has its own share of problems and own share of things that they mess up, it seems at least they're still trying to maintain that HBO brand. Especially, it was one of our current events from not too long ago, where they're going to their programming, they're going to have HBO programming, and then they're going to have Max programming. With HBO programming, the stuff that's going to their channel and airing weekly, that's going to be their high-end quality stuff that lives up to the HBO name, while they might use Max to experiment a little bit more and maybe do things that don't meet the standard, but they want to get it out there. So at least it shows they're still trying to maintain that.
Hey everyone, let's take a moment to talk about where I've been getting these new Not a Strong Start t-shirts from. Head on over to itsnaz.threadless.com. The only place where you can get Not a Strong Start merch, whether it's our newly designed mascot or just your favorite movie logo now with some Nas flair. You can rep your Nas love on tee, hoodie, mug, rug, and so much more. So get yours today. Just click on that link below and have yourself a strong start and not a strong, have a not a strong start, have a start that's strong, but not so strong. You know what to do.
That's true. Yeah. So let's get into some shows that were canceled too soon. What's one from the past that you guys loved, whether it ended in season 1 or season 2? You know, we're trying to keep it. We're trying to limit here our the choices that we have. But what's one that you watched that's just like, man, I really wish we got more. Like there was a lot more star talent, and just the network just did not have enough patience with it.
Yeah, I think one that I'll mention, it was actually the Limitless series that's based off of the movie Limitless. I watched that series and I really enjoyed it. And actually, it was received well critically. So people enjoyed the quality of it. It didn't get the viewership numbers that they wanted at the end of the day. But it was a show that started off, got received well, had good quality. And by the end of it, it actually built up very well, had a good cliffhanger leading into the second season, where they even brought in, what's his name?
Bradley Cooper?
Bradley Cooper. They actually brought him into the show and he was going to integrate into it. So it gave you things to look forward to for the second season. But whatever metrics they had that they wanted the show to meet viewership-wise, it wasn't there. So regardless of the quality, they ended up canceling it. So that's when I felt that ended up being canceled too prematurely because the potential was there and they already had a good base to build off of going forward to another season. And I truly believe the second season would have been even better than the first one.
For me, I'm going with Constantine, which starred Matt Ryan. Such a good show. It had 13 episodes, I believe. I think it was just honestly it's on the wrong channel and the wrong time slot. Like I think it was on like CBS, I want to say, or NBC, one of those two, because Supergirl was on the same channel also. And that didn't last on that channel either. Ended up going to the CW. This show belonged on the CW. Like the actor visually and physically nailed Constantine. He understood the task and he freaking rocked it. And for the fans like who were of the comic book and just of that kind of character, they were there. Like to the point where like he's still Constantine till this day. If you watch any of the Arrowverse Flash shows, he popped up again as Constantine. They had him as the Tomorrow
the
show?
Legends of Tomorrow.
Legends of Tomorrow. Yeah, like he was a part of that cast. Every time there's an animated movie, he's the voice. So like he is still that character. Like they know that the fans love him as this character. But for some reason, just on that channel, it didn't work out. They didn't get the numbers, but huge cult following for that show. And it was bad. It was unjust. It was just bad placement, honestly. If put that show on the CW, I think it would have had quite a few seasons. It would have lasted with the Arrowverse.
It felt very CW, didn't it? I don't understand.
Yeah, honestly, it was better. It was better than CW. Yeah. Like because it was it up there with like Supernatural.
Yeah,
it just came down to rights and how they were distributed and whatever. It might have been CBS. Yeah. And stuff, they're the ones who got that one, and they got the Supergirl one.
Here's one that I think I've mentioned on the pod before, but like this, every time, you know, when we talked about this topic, the show just always pops into my head. You already know what it is. It's the epitome of, I'll let you guess it, but like, let me set it up first. It's the epitome of the show that I felt like you robbed me of a great, phenomenal show that was so destined to be amazing. So go ahead. What was it, Jose?
Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I love that show. Like Judd Apatow, James Franco, Seth Rogen. Yeah, like a star-studded cast. Judd Apatow crushed it when it came to casting. Every one of the actors, every one of the cast of characters branched out and did something else. Like even the youngest little kid that you think, oh, he doesn't, you know, really act. No, he got into writing and stuff. Like they all ended up branching out and doing something great. And this was a way better version of the Wonder Years. And I love the Wonder Years and it was cherished.
I was like, yeah, some blasphemy there, man. Wonder Years, that's a classic.
It was phenomenal, man. It is. But I think Freaks and Geeks is better, man. And I watched Wonder Year. I loved Wonder Years. Freaks and Geeks was so damn well done. Judd Apatow was amazing at it. That's why we ended up doing, you know, 40-Year-Old Virgin and everything. Like, I'm not even surprised. Like, the guy was like a comedic genius, and he found a perfect collection of actors to fit within this world that felt so believable. Like the way when we watched Stranger Things season one, you know how it feels very 80s? Like they nailed the tone.
Yeah.
They nailed the tone with Freaks and Geeks. They nailed it, man. And the music, the way that they tied in with the dramatic storylines of the characters, like it was such a well-crafted story. And they put it like at Friday night. Like who the hell is watching that type of show on a Friday? Like Fox totally screwed up with this show. They didn't know what they were doing with it. I'm upset that they didn't allow another network to pick it up and try to do like a season two, which sometimes we've heard, right? Cobra Kai did that. They were on YouTube TV, then they got picked up, and then Netflix took them over, right? I think it was, and then they jumped to Netflix. Freaks and Geeks is just like they deserve to be on something else. It should have been on NBC or something like that, because NBC at the time was giving their shows more leeway. Like they allowed them to kind of grow a little bit. Freaks and Geeks season one was so good, and they set up so much storylines with stuff. And James Franco, when I watched that show, it was so obvious he was the talented one. His acting was so superb in that. There was one specific episode where, you know, he got in trouble, you know, with the main girl, and they're talking to like the principal and all that, where he got caught cheating on a test. And he goes into this whole spiel where he was crying to her. And, you know, like he was faking it. And she was like, oh, my God, you know, he's describing this whole story where he was called dumb and he didn't have a dad and the mom and all that. Everybody was telling him he was supposed to expect it to go one way. And just for this one brief moment, he thought, let me try going the other path of actually being smart. Let me see how that worked. She totally bought it and everything. And he was sitting there crying and stuff. So then they went and they sat down with the principal and he goes right into the same speech, word for word, with the tears on the same thing. And then she realized he played her. But like the acting of James Franco in that, it was just like, it was just so damn good. And I'm so mad that that show ended. Like that one bothers me the most out of anything else was that Freaks and Geeks ended. I felt like it was going to be a great show and they just robbed us. So, okay. What's one from the past couple years that bothered you guys? Okay. I'm going to go first because I don't, this one, in case you guys have it or whatever, I don't have like other backup options for this one because I feel like, this is the one that's like, they got me with this one. And it wasn't that they, even till today, they haven't officially canceled, but they said it's canceled as of now, and they definitely haven't renewed it. It's the Cabinet of Curiosities, the Guillermo del Toro one. They're not bringing it back. They're not bringing it back for a season two. No. So they said even though they haven't signed off on it, they said it's kind of like unofficially canceled is how the network's saying it. And I was like, no, man, like you gave us a twice. I'm a huge GDT fan, you know, as we all are here on the show, but it's Twilight Zone, man. We're all Twilight Zone fans. We're X-File fans. Like this kind of fit within that. And the macabre of like horror, it was such a show tailored to, I feel like, to us specifically, for us here on this podcast. And the fact that you had different stories and different filmmakers allowing you and showing you in the and they allowed the filmmakers to change the tone and allowed to be complete creative. And we had such a fun time on that show. And even though there was, you know, when we reviewed it, where even if there was a couple of the storylines that we didn't really like, the rat story, I still appreciated it, man. Like it reminds me of what I grew up reading. It reminded me of H.P. Lovecraft. Like I read that through the inspiration that these guys had. And it's just, they took a show away from us that allowed creative freedom. And that just sucks. That sucks. I like that, you know. So
yeah. I've actually, it wasn't that too long ago, I was like, oh, I wonder when the next season's gonna come out.
Yeah, so that's what I said. Yeah. That's why when I was doing the research, I saw that, I was like, damn it, they actually did come out and say that. I was like,
I thought it was a one and done. I didn't even know there was even thoughts about a second season.
There was. Like I remember when Guillermo del Toro was talking about it, he mentioned, you know, like he had ideas for, so that's like I knew he was gonna do that. Like I don't think it would have lasted long, maybe three seasons at most. Like it wasn't gonna be like a 10 season thing, but like three, maybe four. Because he wanted to go into some more H.P. Lovecraft stories. He wanted to really tie into this. But he didn't want it to be too H.P. Lovecraft, which is why there was a mix of it.
I wonder if it's an H.P. Lovecraft thing. Because there was this other show from, I want to say, 2 years ago, which was also, I think it was called Lovecraft Country.
Yeah, that's when they had Jonathan Majors.
Yeah.
One season. That's it. That's all that lasted, too.
But so. you know why that is? Because like I don't know how much of H.P. Lovecraft you guys have read, but
well, I got books.
It's really, really hard to translate it. And Guillermo del Toro has been trying to adapt an H.P. Lovecraft story for so long. And even him who has, he's an Oscar winner, is still having difficulty doing it. Not that he creatively can't, the studio, the network, whatever, they don't. It's hard for them to wrap their head around because it goes back to what we talk about with the whole IP thing and what can you sell and executives and all. It's just, they just don't allow the creative freedom, which is why with the Cabinet of Curiosities, I felt like they were giving them more leeway. And that's why I'm like, ah, man, this might be the only time I was able to adapt H.P. Lovecraft. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. It's easy with H.P. too because it's all royalty free.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's it's the people paying the money that's like, nope.
All right, I'm gonna go with one that was on Netflix, came out in 2022, called The Imperfects. Now, this show wasn't a perfect show. I will state that, pun intended.
It was imperfect.
But I liked the chemistry of the cast. It actually had the kid that was in the One Piece show. He plays One Piece, or he plays Luffy.
Yeah,
yeah. He's one of the kids. He's like a werewolf chupacabra. And so each, they're all like different kinds of like monsters of sorts. So he's like a werewolf, but a chupacabra. One's like a vampire, but a little different. The other one, I think, is maybe succubus like or has like pheromone powers. But it gave me like the Misfits. Do you ever see that show that was on Hulu when it first came out?
Yeah.
It gave me that those kind of vibes, or even like some of the, like heroes or alphas, but more on that comedic side. But it was a really fun show. And like they led it to believe at the end there was going to be more to come. It gave us a nice little like ending but cliffhanger at the same time. And it just unfortunately went, and then going to the actors are at least getting jobs. Like Netflix is still giving those actors jobs, and that's great for them. But there was definitely something good there. Like sometimes these shows with like superpowers, you know, almost like they're trying to be their own X-Men to some extent, don't always get a fair run, I feel. Like there's not a lot of them that go past maybe the three or so seasons. It's usually just one season. It's like, all right, you didn't cut it, we're done. Which is, I think it's just too bad. There was a lot of good stuff here, honestly. And the effects weren't bad either.
I'm going to have to go with, there was a wrestling show called Heels. And it actually had the lead guy from Arrow. And this show, it was a drama. Very, you know, simple stories, small town wrestling organization run by family and a lot of stuff. And I grew up like really enjoying wrestling and watching WWE and a little WCW and all that stuff. And, you know, it's not something that's touched on too much overall. So just watching that, it was good acting. It was entertaining. It had an engaging story throughout it. It didn't overstay its welcome. I think each season was only like 8 episodes, so it moved at a good pace where you didn't have filler, it wasn't lingering. There was an emotional aspect to it where you actually cared about these characters. And, you know, it wasn't very black and white characters either, which I enjoy. You know, each character was flawed in their own way, so it made for, you know, very entertaining television. And the first season happened, and I was hooked. Then the second season happened, and the story progressed. You had a character come out of nowhere and kind of come to the forefront where you were kind of cheering for this person. And it ended in a really good way in the second season where I was pumped for the third. And then, no. And again, another show that critically was received well. The quality was there. And they couldn't give it the chance to finish its story, even though that was happening. So I'm highly disappointed. I know they're still trying to shop it. And the first two seasons, I guess, are going to Netflix. Netflix bought the rights for the first two seasons. So maybe if enough people watch it, it'll end up getting a third season. Netflix has done that before.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But as of now, it's canceled. So that one was a heavy disappointment.
That was FX too, I think, right? That was on?
Yes.
I think it was FX. Yeah. I remember when that show came out, Stephen Amell was popping up in WWE and giving that show a lot of more credibility because he was like in the ring doing stuff with the wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that was a really good show. It was too bad that left.
Bonus question for you guys. Is there a show right now that's kind of out that maybe only had one season that's kind of on the brink of possibly getting canceled and you're just like, you don't want it to? For me, it's the show Sandman. I really loved the first season. Oh, I thought it was really good. I know Netflix committed to one more season, but I think they already said, like, that's it. Like, close out your storylines because it's so expensive. But it was one where I read a few of the comics. I didn't read a ton of it. But when I watched the show, I was just blown away. I thought it was really cool. I thought it was really original. I thought it was very high concept, like, really original. And it's just, that just sucks. It sucks. It's like a super creative show that they allowed the creators to do what they needed to do. And it didn't feel, even though it's IP, I didn't feel like the show felt so commercialized. And that's one where I'm like, it's not technically obviously canceled yet because they're doing a second season, but I know that they said like that's it after that. And it's just, that sucks. It's another show that's going to end prematurely.
Yeah. It almost didn't even get that second season. Yeah. They were ready to cancel it after the first.
Yeah.
Because it's weird. And I had read with Netflix, their viewership numbers, the thresholds that they set, is not based on the quality of the show. They
Yeah.
base it off of the money they put into a show. So if they have a really bad show, but it isn't very expensive,
Low
their
budget.
threshold for viewership might only be here. So they'll renew that crappy show because it doesn't cost us too much. We got, this 25% viewership, just to throw a number out there.
Those reality
But
shows on, that's
yeah,
why
so
you
you
see
have a
so
thousand
many
lovers
on
blinds.
there.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Exactly.
exactly.
But then you have a show that's more expensive and it has maybe quadruple the viewership of that crappy show, but it doesn't meet their higher threshold because they put more money into it. They'll cancel that four times the viewership show that has this critically acclaimed just because of that.
Me and my wife Jen were actually recently talking about something similar to this subject, and she brought up a show that we experienced watching Shogun, and like that show was a mini series, so it wasn't even meant to have multiple seasons, but because of how it ended, like the last episode was just so rushed, we were kind of talking about, it's like that deserved maybe an extra season, like, and it was such a good show with how it was developed and everything. They could have really stretched it out at least for like to have a 3 4 seasons and still had a nice solid complete story. So like even some shows that are just meant to have one season maybe should have more, even if they were developed only as a miniseries. But like Shogun deserved it. It was very well acted. That the they nailed the setting of that 100%.
Yeah, and it's I'm disappointed they're going for a second season of that one. But if they would have gone with the approach that you're saying of extending the story into multiple seasons, that would have worked. I'm disappointed because they've already finished the source material. And how often does it go well when you kind of go on your own with the material? The
Yeah.
story is done that they did. They're extending it for the purposes of this was popular, let's make more money. But that's what disappoints me about it. But if they would have taken that story and hold it over 2 seasons, maybe 3 seasons, don't push it too much, I think I would have been happy with multiple seasons. But they closed it all in one.
Yeah.
So then it's like, now we don't know what's coming. And I don't know if your creative direction is going to fit with what was there in the original story.
See, and that's one thing that Stranger Things did, right? It was supposed to be a different story season. The first season was supposed to just be an anthology of these characters, but it was so popular and everybody loved them that that just became Stranger Things. That was the show.
Yeah.
But it wasn't intended to be like that. It was supposed to be a different story every season. So they made the pivot, basically, to your point. So this show could have done the same.
Yeah, so off the top of my head, I'll go with a show. It's kind of similar to Sandman, which is funny because it's a Netflix show, and that's the show Arcane, where it's getting a second season, but they've pretty much said that's going to be it. And I'm assuming, animation is always going to be more expensive. With it, that's why when they do like cartoons and things like that, they try to rely on merchandising sale to try to make up some of the money. So this is already taken, George, how many years? Like 3 years
It's like
since the
3
last one came
years,
out?
yeah.
Yeah, so it's already taken long enough. And then now they're pretty much saying we're gonna give you one more season and you're done. And if the second show is even close to as good as the first season, it's gonna be highly disappointing when that ends, because that first season, I know nothing about the property and I loved that first season.
That's a good one. I saw it too, and I thought it was great. It was really the animation was so unique to me. You know, it felt kind of futuristic a lot in this way, which obviously fit the story and stuff. But I dug it, man. I thought it was really cool too. And I don't know anything about the IP. Thank you for watching another episode of Not a Strong Start. Please like, subscribe, comment, and share on our YouTube channel, Not a Strong Start. You can listen to us anywhere you listen to your podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Not a Strong Start. I am your host. No two for you. You can follow me at King_Sangre.
I'm not your host. Get in, get out. And you can find me at This Is Me Nombre on Instagram.
And I'm your other guy. Where we're going, we don't need pilots. And you can follow me at Megalopolis.